RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. We're going to have a nice, easy, relaxing sort of episode this week. I think we're just going to, you know, talk a little bit about nuclear disarmament, nuclear proliferation, and probably personal hygiene that you would have to, you know, deal with in sort of a bunker situation. So I think that would be some, you know, nice discussion for this week. What do you say?
Well, I think personal hygiene is always important, but, you know, it is, as long as I'm here with you, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. The first time I saw you, you looked so fine, and I had a feeling that one day you'd be mine. Penny lover. Okay, you know what? Never mind. Sorry, I was just getting kind of in the mood for being inside of a dome for a long extended period of time.
Yeah, now I've got memories stuck in my head by Barbra Streisand. So, all right. Well, gee, thanks for bringing Lionel Richie with you over to the podcast this week. That's he's always welcome here.
He can just... of course, yeah. Anytime you want to dance on the ceiling, that's cool. Well, I'm ready to talk about the end of the world. How about you?
Yes, I am too, and I feel fine about that. So what what episode is – I really wanted them to start breaking into REM at some point in the middle of this. So.
It would have been funny. We're talking about season 4, episode 21, May 11th, 2016, the episode Monument Pint.
Point.
Hey, I may not be Mansa, but I know how to read, sweetie. Okay. You know what? You're right. That does say point. Monument Point.
Or it could be like my dad pronounces it, Monument
Point. Monument? Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Don't know where he gets that from. Born in California. Can't say Monument. Whatever.
Well, Monument Point was written by Speed Weed and Jenny Lynn. That's like a superhero duo. It was... directed by Kevin Tancharoen, who has not been over here directing Arrow, but we have seen him on Flash, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, I think he did one episode of The Flash, if I'm not mistaken, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., of course.
Oh, yes. So, all right. Well, Mulligan, world needs a do-over. That's right. Luckily, Hive has a plan. Let's arm some nukes and cleanse the world. Oh, that talk about hygiene there. That's
it's a nuclear colonic.
And we're done, folks. That's it. I can't top that. Well, you know, unless Oliver Queen, millionaire playboy and Viridian vigilante with a bow, can find a way to stop Dark's magic. Well, that's where the calculator comes in. Felicity's hacker genius father, Noah Cutler, may be the only one able to stop Rubicon from launching the nukes. Now, Dark sends his prison buddies, Brick and Murmur.
Yes. Okay. Prison buddies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Prison buddies. Yeah. Brick and Murmur to kill him. To Felicity's father there, but before he gets the chance to use his particular set of computer skills. But Damien may have his hands full if Lonnie Machen can find him. Anarchy wants revenge, so he plans to destroy the Hive nuclear fallout sanctuary dome that Thea happens to be trapped in right now. Green Arrow and Spartan save the calculator from Brick and Murmur before they take him to Dark's Nexus so he can stop Rubicon, while I realize how incredibly odd that sentence would sound in virtually any other context.
Interesting. Just a quick aside, is Brick and Murmur, are those two albums by REM?
Brick and Murmur?
Yeah.
It could be.
I know Murmur is. I'm not sure about Brick, but.
It needs to be. They just need to get together just for that if it's not. But yeah. Brick and Murmur. Anyway, they this was a fun episode to talk about. Nothing's ever easy in Star City, of course. Yeah. The ghosts make it hard on the team, while anarchy makes it hard on Thea. But the good guys are triumphant against the nuclear threat.
Yay! With
one minor Haven Rocky type failure.
Oh, Haven Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. Yeah.
That, unfortunately. Wow. Wowie, wow, wow. Was not expecting that ending.
I was not either. And there's still two episodes left. This wasn't even the penultimate episode. I mean, they've stepped it up a notch, and they have, you know, two more notches to go before the end of the season. So we're going to talk about it a little bit here, but I'm really not sure, like, what they've got. They are so off the rails right now. I don't know what they're going to do. This is crazy nuts. So
yes, it is. this episode got me even more excited. I think I talked last week about how I was really enjoying where they were going last week. And yeah. This week too, man, I'm pumped up for the end of the season here.
I am definitely interested to see where they're going, but other than the blowing up a city and kind of all the things, you know, I don't think they're going to shy away from having to deal with the fallout, no pun intended, really, for that. But this was kind of, you know, the episode before the penultimate episode, the ante penultimate episode, right? Is that?
Yeah, I think so.
I believe that's what
we came up. I think we came up with a term for that at once, but
the pre-penultimate, I think, is what we had probably come up with. But you know, it felt like they were positioning a lot of characters in this episode, which there was a lot of busy work that was going on, and very minor payoff or very minor movement, but there were, you know, setups for a number of things, and of course, I do want to talk about all of that. But before we get into that, I do have one piece of news. We got let me just step back. You may have heard that DC Comics is undergoing another kind of big event. They are rebooting their universe yet again.
No, they're not rebooting it.
No, not rebooting.
They're rebirthing it.
Rebirthing it. Okay. Well, it's called Rebirth, and in the vein of Green Lantern Rebirth, which was, I don't know, like a decade ago, and Flash Rebirth, which was 8 years ago or something like that, they are kind of reinventing all their titles, including Batman and Superman. And what's really cool about this is they're going back to the original numbering for Detective Comics and Action Comics. So probably within the next couple years, those issues will be able to reach 1,000, which I don't know that there's ever been a comic that has actually hit that magic number. And it's silly that they had gone away from that. But we're talking about Green Arrow. They finally revealed Oliver's new look, which is not really necessarily a new look. It's really an old look for the hero. It's a little bit different than the new 52 version. He does have the goatee again, you know, and the domino mask with the white eyes in it. But the costume is a little bit reminiscent of his TV counterpart here.
Yeah, I would say that it is a combination of all of those things. The TV, the New 52, and a little bit of the classic. I think it's almost a combination of all of those. I really like it.
It looks really interesting, and they say that Oliver is going to be a, quote, social justice warrior in this, which kind of interesting to see how they do that. But he's always, yeah, you know, politics has never been something that Oliver Queen has shied away from in the comic books. So we should be getting the new issue here. I believe it's mid-June of 2016 here, and Black Canary is a big part of it. A lovely cover for the new issue that I posted a picture of on our Facebook page, so you can check that out there. And of course, we'll have more information as it comes to light on that.
Yes.
Are you thinking you're gonna start picking it up when it comes out, or are you gonna wait?
I would really like to. No, I'm the look alone is enough that it's gotten me excited about it. So I'm looking forward to it.
I usually wait with single issues now. It's just because comics are so darn expensive. I mean, they're either $3.99 or $4.99, depending on what you're buying and when you're buying it. So I usually wait to find out how the reviews of the series are going, and then I'll pick up like the first trade paperback, which usually collects like the first arc, which is usually about 5 or 6 issues. I'm doing that for the Marvel Power Man and Iron Fist series that's out right now, which is phenomenal. If if you like fun comics, that is a fun comic right now. But I definitely want to see what they're going to do with Green Arrow here.
I would love to show that kind of restraint. We'll see if it's possible.
That is true. Yeah, it is difficult to not pick up stuff that attracts you or that you're interested in, and you know, having to wait for the trade paperbacks. I do know that is difficult. So. All right, well, let's get in talking a little bit about Monument Point here, which is a city that is near Star City. I didn't really get this too much from this episode, and I know they've talked about Monument Point on the show before. So I had to go to the Arrow Wiki and look it up. It's the home to the nearest army base in relation to Star City, as was mentioned back in Season 2. And it's about 300 miles away. And based on the maps that they showed on where the flight path of the nuclear missile was going and everything, it appears to be in around like Richmond, Virginia, or somewhere in southern Virginia / northern North Carolina.
Yep, that's what it looked like to me too.
Which is weird because I always pictured Star City as being a little more, West Coast, Northeast, like near Vancouver.
Are you assuming that it was intended to be near Star City?
Well, according to, as I said, it's about 300 miles away from Star City.
Is that what they said? Yeah.
Well, it was, again, that was a reference back in Season 2, according to the Arrow Wiki.
I guess that is pretty close,
which would make me think, it's because, and they've used Baltimore as Star City, as exteriors for Star City. We've seen the Baltimore Aquarium and other shots of downtown, but then also sometimes it's like downtown Cleveland or Philly. I mean, whatever cityscape they have to use, there have been many cityscapes that have filled in for Star City. It's probably not, the capital, Washington, D.C. I think that still exists, but I would say it's like a Baltimore or a Philly kind of city, I would think. Something like that. Or like I said, it wouldn't be further south. It's a northeast city. So anyway, so what is it with bad guys called Hive this season wanting to nuke different parts of the world? For those of you that are watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I just want to run down some of the comparisons that I saw pretty much as of this week between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Arrow. And, we talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. case files, and I hadn't seen Arrow when we talked about our case files yet. So I found all this stuff like really interesting. And Kevin Tancheron, directs Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes, so he's over here. But he didn't have anything to do with the writing. It's just some of the concepts or the themes, just some of the phrases that people used were really similar. So let me just see if I can mention a couple of these to you, Josh, okay?
Okay.
So this season on both shows, the villain is called Hive. On Arrow, it's a organization, H-I-V-E, that stands for something, and a guy that uses magic who has his followers pop little yellow pills to lend their compliance and, basically do what he says. On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's a ancient inhuman mutant character, basically, that is named Hive, capital H, lowercase IVE, who has the ability, he's kind of a parasite creature and has the ability to slough off parts of himself into others to control them and to do his bidding. The end game for both organizations, both villains for the season, is to launch a missile into the air and to destroy humanity in some aspect. In this particular this week's episodes, there were characters that had, quote, mommy issues. Donnie Machen was referring to Thea as his mommy because basically his birth as Anarchy came at her hands. She scarred him. And on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the lead female character Daisy and Hive kind of pooled their blood together to create these mutant offspring called primitives. He was referring to Hive was referring to those as their children. And then this is the weirdest thing. The phrase whack-a-mole was used by a black character on both shows, referring to computers. On Arrow, Diggle used it when Felicity was talking about having to shut down all the nuclear silos one by one. And he says, oh, like playing whack-a-mole. And on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they were trying to keep Daisy out of their computer system. So Mac says, it's like playing whack-a-mole here, as he puts a CD and changes a disk drive and stuff like that. So how weird is all that?
That is a little weird. But I think you get in movies that come from the same genre, I think you get, or not movies, but anything, that TV shows, movies, media, comic books, yeah. Anything. Yeah, any media, that you'll get similar reactions to things because the situations are, you know, similar, you know, world ending situations. But those are pretty specific. So, yeah. And I think it is just a giant coincidence. But
yeah, I agree.
Very interesting.
I was going to say, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe these writers, whoever wrote Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week and Speed Weed and Jenny Lynn here, maybe they were all at the same writing workshop. So there were things that got discussed. You know, I mean, it would not be unheard of that a number of writers would be going to a workshop on the weekends or, you know, during a hiatus or something like that. And it would be writers from different series. And you would probably see writers who are working in the same genre. So like, you know, the crime drama people would be going to a certain type of writing workshop, but they would not be joined by people who are doing writing for comedies. And, you know, stuff gets discussed there where they're probably coming up with ideas. And it wouldn't surprise me if there was a little, you know, cross-pollination between ideas from these different writers and stuff like that.
So, no, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Just the whack-a-mole thing was a thing that kind of triggered it in my head. And I said, that is just weird. And of course, you know, I started being able to draw these other parallels here. So
we've seen quite a few of that this season between all three of the shows that you and I review. The Harry Potter references and
yes.
There are a couple lines, I think, that, you know, you can't lose who you are or something like that, you know, so several weeks ago. So
thematically, yeah, interesting. There's a lot of crossover, especially, you know, you've got redemption arcs and you've got heroes and villains and things like that. So you're right. A lot of things do come up and the phrases that come up are eerily similar in a lot of cases. It doesn't surprise me between all the CW shows because, of course, the writers are all probably, you know, working in the same building and, you know, talking with each other and stuff, you know, on coffee breaks and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
So Dark's plan is to basically, he was going to use this Rubicon device to take over all these missiles, and he did it. He launched them I guess he was going to launch them across the world, and they were able to stop all of them except for just the one that happened to hit very near where Star City was. Close enough, at least, so that Damian Dark could pull his, you know, pull the deaths of all of the individuals through the ley lines, I guess, you know, in the idol, and give himself the superpowers that he needs to, you know, whatever it is he's going to do with his powers now, you know, probably, you know, go fight Oliver and stuff. Are you surprised that Malcolm Merlyn is pretty much totally on board with this plan? He's been hanging around a little bit, but he is a number one lieutenant in this episode, I think.
A number one lieutenant that like escaped from New York. I'm not surprised at all, actually, because and even he said, you know, it's similar to the plan that he had with the Glades,
which I am glad that they referenced, because I think I mentioned this last week that it's like, wow, this is very similar, except it's just on a larger scale.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is they.
And the other thing is, it's, you know, because he's with League of Assassins, this is a very League of Assassin-y kind of philosophy, you know? It wasn't even kind of, and forgive me if I'm not up on my Dark Knight lore here, but wasn't that even kind of Ra's al Ghul's plan in Dark Knight, is to cleanse
he was
Gotham?
Yeah, he was going to take down Gotham. Ra's al Ghul's plan in Batman Begins was very similar to Malcolm Merlyn's plan from season one.
Right. So anyway, so that's why it wasn't surprising to me, because it seems like a very League of Assassin kind of thing to do.
Okay. And then how about Brick and Murmur being added to the roster? They were more kind, I guess, there for like, you know, thug purposes. But we've seen Murmur working with Dark a little bit. But were you surprised that they brought Brick back for this particular episode?
I was surprised they brought him back, but pleasantly surprised. I really liked seeing him, and he's a lot more. He's got a lot more interesting dialogue than Murmur.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's nice to, you know, hear something said. I thought he was pretty good in this. And I'm not surprised that they were on board, because I think he probably made a deal that, you know, they'd be saved as well. But
yeah, my concern.
I kind of liked that they were bringing these villains back. I thought that was kind of interesting.
There have been a lot of really cool villains that they have added to the show, and seeing them team up is kind of cool. I'd rather see them team up on a more equal footing than rather have this huge power disparity between like the master, the leader, and the other ones. But I really love Brick. Vinnie Jones is just an awesome character actor. But the more I see Murmur, I every time I see him, I just think, like, how does he eat? What happens if he gets the stomach flu? You know, just these sort of things. It's
your nose and your mouth are connected, my friend.
That's even worse, man. What happens if he has to sneeze? I mean, he's, I understand how that is. So, and we've got we have another villain that's brought in, but he's not really on board with Dark here, Anarchy. Just by nature of his name, that's what he brings. Lonnie Machen is the poison pill, the fly in the ointment here. He may actually be Team Arrow's best shot at bringing down the Ark. What are the chances of him teaming up with Oliver and company in some fashion in the next couple episodes? Or do you think that Team Arrow and Anarchy are going to be kind of working together, but not together? Like, they're both going for the same kind of thing, but not necessarily like teaming up.
Right. I don't know. I mean, he's such a wild card. I mean, even more than Felicity's dad, he's a wild card, I think.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't think Felicity's dad is too much of a wild card, but we can get into that in a minute. But
yeah.
Anarchy, definitely.
He's just too unreliable. I mean, because he's just so delusional almost, you know, that I don't know that they would team up with them. I mean, they might be able to use him, but I mean, ultimately, you know, his goal was to take down the dome, and they really don't need to focus on the dome so much if they're trying to save the entire world. So they don't even need the dome, you know? So,
right.
But I don't think that Machen would be capable of taking down Dark. I just don't think he'd be powerful enough. So,
but he may be the distraction. He may be the distraction that they need to, you know, do something. And I'm not even actually
sure. That's a good
idea.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I'm not even sure Dark is with where the dome is. I mean, he seems to be wherever the ley lines were, which was under City Hall, I guess.
Yeah, Yep.
Okay. So.
Yeah. Well, do we know exactly where the dome is? We don't really know, do we?
It's above that street. And in the previously on, you know, we came up out of the dome and it's in a street. I'm guessing it's, you know, my best guess actually is when they rebuilt the glades, he put that in. Is probably where it is.
Interesting.
So.
Okay. I bet you they've got, you know, a little magic elevator or bat hole or something that leads down there though for him.
And I didn't see Pauly Shore. I was thinking he would probably be down there, buddy.
Yeah, I thought so.
Hanging in the biodome. So, and while we're talking about the dome, aka the Ark, in this case, Alex, who is, I still really don't understand how these pills work because he's like totally he's functional, but he's totally oblivious about really what's going on. I mean, he's saying things, but
I was just thinking how people think that same thing about me. Oh. Functional, but totally oblivious.
Okay. Thea just does not pick good boyfriend. I mean, Roy was a pretty good boyfriend, I guess. But
yeah,
since then,
I guess. Yeah. I mean, even then, he lost. You know, she lost him. But
yeah,
he would have been good if he'd stuck around, I suppose.
So is Alex dead? Do you think? It was very hard for me to tell by Thea's reaction whether he was really dead or if she was relieved that he was okay. I couldn't quite read that.
My initial reaction that I wrote down in my notes was that he was dead ski. I don't think he's going to make it. I think he's gone. We don't really need him anymore. He wasn't a bad guy. He was just being manipulated.
Right.
He didn't really have any kind of protection from what was going on. And my biggest concern there was, why didn't Thea get up then when she knew he was getting ready to attack him? I mean, and again, I know she was hurt. She was fighting and stuff like that. But right after he supposedly killed him, she just hopped right up and started at him again.
Yeah. She was screaming at him to stop, but didn't take action. Yeah. I don't know. But you're right. He truly really doesn't serve a purpose anymore. I mean, his purpose was to be kind of mysterious and basically get Thea into this place. And now she's there. So we don't really need him unless they were going to continue on as, you know, a couple, which I don't know. I can see him driving her into exile or something like that. She's like, it's, you know, she may just freak out about having continually losing boyfriends.
About the guilt of really essentially being responsible for his death. I mean, not honestly, it was Machen's fault, but he killed him because of her. So
right, and you know, and she helped create Machen and kind of unleashed him. Though she was not necessarily completely in her right mind at the time, still under the effects of the Lazarus Pit. So, you know, she, you know, can't really be blamed for what happened, but she was instrumental in anarchy being born, basically, as you know, as he called out in this episode, calling her mommy and stuff, which is also just creepy because, you know, he's only like, if anything, he may be like a year older than her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not much. If even older than her.
Right. He may not be older than her. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Oliver. As we saw last week, Oliver's kind of made a change. He is maturing rapidly here. And being able to see a lot of his foibles and talk about them because as he sees other people, you know, maybe it's like that old thing where, you know, you don't recognize the faults in yourself, but as soon as you see somebody else doing one of the things that you do that may be wrong, oh, it's, you totally recognize that. And when they, you know, say, you know, you do that too, it's like, no, of course I don't do that. It's, but you were doing that. Oliver is actually seeing all the faults through himself and help, you know, being a counselor for others, as well as kind of a cheerleader with Felicity, you know, that she can do it. She's the best. Okay. Well, let's not go that far. But the part with John, I thought was really interesting. You know, they had the initial discussion where John's like, you know exactly what I'm going through with my brother because you and your mother, you know, your mother was killed, and you're actually bringing another, you know, crazy parent into the cave here to work on stuff. And I thought Oliver's response was really bold. It was that it's not that he didn't trust Cutler, but he trusted Felicity. And I think that's cool because it shows a couple things. One is that he's learning good management skills, right? He trusts his employees. And so, you know, it's up to Felicity then to know how far to allow Noah to go or not go, you know, and what he can do and stuff like that. So Oliver's really letting other people take responsibility for their, you know, like the components decisions that they work with.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, he's becoming a positive hero, you know, I mean, and not having to deal with so many issues, although, you know, I'm sure that will come up again. It always does. It's part of character building, but, I thought he was good in the sense that I thought, Stephen Amell did a great job of portraying that, especially in that scene with John. And he even admitted, you know, as Oliver Queen, he had done some of those similar things that Diggle had. That doesn't mean, you know, I don't know what I can't remember what he said, but he had learned them, from
basically,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, I like to say they're taking the Green Arrow character in this because he's going to help the team get through these traumatic times. Mm-hmm. At least I hope it that's what it looks like right now. He's got to figure out a way to beat Dark though.
Yeah. Now I will say it did seem to come on kind of strong because there were definitely episodes after the kind of the mid season there where he was still kind of running headlong into stuff that, you know, he should have seen. But since Laurel's death, they've made the character really slow down and pause and reevaluate pretty much everything about his life, the way he does stuff. And actually what I'm just realizing, we really haven't gotten any Oliver Queen stuff lately. It's, you know, it's been the Green Arrow and everything about trying to stop Dark where, you know, since he gave up the politics, we're not even getting any really, moments of Oliver's personal life anymore. You know, he's been living in the bunker with the where the team works and stuff like that, you know, instead of at the Y, I guess. So,
he was working at the Y. Yeah, I agree with it. But remember, you and I had talked about that when Laurel died, we thought that was going to be a really important change to the character and to the storyline, you know? Mm-hmm. So to me, it seems like it has been more interesting. So, you know, as much as people didn't like it, it might be working.
Yeah, at least for the way Oliver's character is working, I'm liking it there. I haven't been the biggest fan of the storyline in total this season. There were elements of the magic stuff I thought worked. But again, for the most part, we were in the dark for so long, no pun intended, that we just didn't know what was happening. So, you know, I would like that. I just want them to hurry up and resolve this. And obviously they've raised the stakes here and we've got a couple more episodes. So, maybe we can talk for a few minutes at the end of the episode with where we think this is going. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about Felicity and Noah. He made his first appearance, maybe three or four episodes ago now. And Felicity actually found out, I guess she knew who her dad was, but found out that then he was this this amazing hacker called the Calculator, which she had actually gone up with up against at some point. And she has all these trust issues because he left her. He left her mom. Her mom is obviously really angry at Noah still. But Felicity shows a really interesting character trait, her positivity here, where she's actually willing to put aside her distrust, for her father, to be able to work with him so that they can take care of what needs to be taken care of, which I think is great, because I do get tired of that kind of the old trope where two characters hate each other and nope, I can't work with this person no matter what. And it's like, well, okay, the world's about to go up in nuclear Armageddon. It's like, still not going to work with this person. And really in those cases, I think somebody, you have to just look inside yourself. It's like, really, you're going to be petty enough to let the world get blown up instead of, helping out. So I thought that was noble.
My personal preference of Felicity leadership, she summed it up really well at the beginning when they were asking her if they could trust him. And I think they were more worried that, look, can we trust him? Because if we, if he betrays us, we're going to fail and we can't do it. But she says, I'm not saying we can trust him. I'm saying we need to trust him.
Yeah.
And of course, she's seeing it logically again, which I like when they let Felicity do that kind of stuff. And so we're getting back to a little bit more enjoyable character development for her. So again, this could all be going the way I want it to.
Do you think we can trust Noah? Obviously, no. He helped them out. Okay. He helped them out with this problem. But like, what now that, they've solved this issue, what do you think is going to happen with him? Is he going to steal something and cut and run? Or what do you think?
I really just don't. He's never shown any sign of trustworthiness at all, even back when he was with Donna. I mean, I just don't think you can trust him. When the coast is clear, I think he'll cut and run and on the way out, try to take something or successfully take something.
Or put a virus in their system or a bug or something like that, right?
Yeah, I don't know that he would. I mean, I don't know that he would sabotage him necessarily unless it was to kind of cover his escape. I don't know that he has any, what's the word I'm looking for? Any harsh feelings towards Felicity or anybody else on the team. He was more looking out for himself,
Yeah, that's true. He might cover his escape. He really did seem to be, every time he opened his mouth, it was always about kind of trying to reconnect with Felicity. He was very adamant and forthright about at least appearing like he wanted to reconnect with her. And
well,
part of me thinks that he's truthful in that. And part of me thinks that he's just doing that to get her so she's really not paying attention to him so he can do something else.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, that's exactly what he did the first time when he came in and was trying to steal something from Palmer Tech, that he acted like he wanted to make this connection with her. Maybe he did, but while he was doing that, he also took stuff. So I just don't think we can trust him. I mean, you see a pattern in someone's behavior, and I'm not sure why that would just all automatically changed.
Yeah.
But at that point, to me, it felt like we could have used Curtis. Where was Curtis?
That was true. Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, we're going to go, she's been booted out of the lab. Oh, well, who's the best person for her to talk to would be Curtis. That would be presumably the best way to get anything out of the lab. And the only thing I can think is that the actor wasn't available this week. It's just what it seems like. So I talked earlier about how I liked some aspects of the show, but it just kind of got stretched out. It basically took us 45. I mean, I know they needed to fill the time. They gave the whole setup as at the beginning of the episode, there was only 21 hours. And, the part of it was they had to do some reprogramming. They had to find out where the ley lines were. They had to steal this tech and stuff. And that's where all the time goes. And so, it was the last 15 minutes that were the, that was the last 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever.
I think they used that time also, though, to develop the characters of with Felicity and her father, that relationship. So I think that was a good use of the time.
And that was interesting. For me, it was the whole heist thing. It's like that we've got to get a piece that, you know, Felicity has access to. And then we had to deny Felicity access to get it. So, you know, they fired her. Okay, so that's something that big thing that happened here at the end of the season. But, it's obviously that's something we're not going to deal with this episode. And we may not even deal with it this season. And so then they have to regroup and break in and, you know, problems happen there. And I just, the whole heist thing, it seemed like a time filler to me, because when they want to, they can go in and usually get what they want relatively easy. And it's, I don't know. I felt it was really artificial in the way that these blockages kept coming towards them when they seemed to go, you know, come and go in other episodes, you know, as the plot needs them to. And in this case, the plot needed them to fail and be stopped at each turn and stuff like that. So it was overly convenient in a negative way, I felt, for the episode.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. Didn't bother me. I didn't even notice it. And then, you know, now that you're saying it, I can kind of see it, but it kind of worked for me.
I did like Felicity almost, but not quite, hitting Noah with the van as a kind of continuation of her hitting people with the van montage that we can set up now, I guess. So.
That would be good.
Yeah. And then this just seemed like a weird coincidence, and I just want to bring it up to you to see if we can maybe unravel anything about it. The housing tract in the dome that they're in, I'm not sure which is they're referring to, but it's called Tevat Noah, is what the announcement lady said at one point when we were outside and all the people were walking in, going into the various houses. That is Hebrew for Noah's Ark. And then we've got this character, you know, and that was the whole thing they talked about last week. They were comparing the biblical flood wiping out the earth to Damien Dark's flood, which would be this nuclear Armageddon. So he built these arcs, which are these domes underneath, well, at least one underneath Star City. We don't know if there were arcs other places, though. I think we assume that Hive had built them. So should there be any references between Noah's Ark and a character named Noah on the show? Is there something, some subtext that maybe we're not reading that we should with this?
Well, it's a pretty big coincidence if they didn't intend that, though. I mean, I'm sure they could have come up with a different solution without having Noah on the show, but that worked really well. So I'm kind of leaning towards it's a coincidence. But if you think about it, I mean, Noah, her Felicity's father, he's trying to save them or take them on this path away from this destruction, right? Stopping the destruction, whereas the dome is the actual arc that you're going to be on while the destruction is occurring. So, I mean, I guess you can kind of compare them like that. But I don't know. That's interesting. Usually, I didn't put that together either.
Yeah, usually Noah is not used as sort of a character that gets referenced. I mean, obviously, you know, Jesus and Moses and maybe the Pharaoh are characters that get brought up. But, you know, Noah's Noah, and there usually is not a lot of, you know, metaphor that comes with that character or anything. So I don't know. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring it up because I caught the name of the arc there in the subtitles. So, all in all, though, I thought it was a clever solution that Felicity came up with. You know, what do you do when there's this nuclear missile coming down and you can't hack into it quickly enough? Well, you move the city, which I think she said she only moved it like 20 miles. So I kind of feel like with the nuclear blast that a couple things. One is that I didn't think the nuclear blast would actually hit the ground and impact and explode. I think most of those kind of missiles are designed to have an air impact, so they kind of maximize damage and you know, they don't actually explode at ground level, but.
No, well, maybe when she, well, you could explain that away, but I was going to say maybe, you know, when she changed the city, maybe it, you know, it had a higher elevation or something, but.
True. But only being 20 miles away, if that's what it was, or maybe she was just talking about the, she moved the GPS 20 miles, you know, for everybody on the East Coast when she did that one prank. So maybe it wasn't actually 20 miles that she, that Haven Rock is away, but 20 miles, not that far in terms of like nuclear fallout and stuff like that. So
no, going to be some problems there.
Right. So, you know, even though she, it's a win, but of course it's a pretty big loss. Tens of thousands of people died, but as Lila pointed out, if it had hit Monument Point, we're talking a couple million people. So, you know, on the order of hundreds of thousands of lives saved, I think Felicity is a really good thing. But, I think this is obviously negatively going to impact the character as she moves on. And it may, you know, it may make her step back from the team a little bit. There's rumors that, you know, Oliver may be, you know, going a little more solo in the future here. And so I could see that, you know, keeping her, holding her back from, you know, helping out and stuff.
Oh, I tell you what, that scene hit me hard. I totally felt what Felicity was feeling. I don't know that I could come back from that. And yeah, you know, she saved millions of lives and I get that, but the guilt that you would have from killing tens of thousands. Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine. Can't imagine it.
Well, it's, you know, it's like the decisions that Lila has to make, you know, probably on daily basis and stuff like that. I mean, just it's hard to send somebody out to be a soldier and stuff like that. You know that, you know, people are going to die in that, and you know, Felicity's not trained for that kind of thing, but she made a decision that she need, you know, that she may had to make, and you know, she probably was just reacting and moved it. You know, I don't know that she necessarily thought about where she was moving it to. Like she, you know, there was not much time for her to probably say, "Well, is Haven Rock a better than moving it over, you know, whatever this other
oh sure town yeah
is or something like that." So
oh yeah, and I mean, you could totally rationalize her decision to do it. And it was the right decision. She was doing anything she could in the moment, but still, you would still feel that guilt.
Yeah. So we see then Oliver and John find the, what do they call it? The Nexus Chamber, which very much looked like the one that, Fortuna took Oliver and Felicity to last week. That seemed just like kind of a lazy way to do it. Like they didn't even try to like change the camera angle in it or anything like that. But we saw him, you know, absorbing all of this energy coming through the idol. Before we finish talking about Dark, though, I do want to jump to the flashback where we saw Oliver and Tiana rescuing the idol from Ryder. And this week we saw the flashback, quote unquote, shot from the other week where her eyes were all yellow. And I thought that was kind of a weird flashback because it was something that he was thinking about, you know, as he was reliving all the people that I guess that he had seen die and why they used this shot that we hadn't seen. So I think, I understand where that's going now, but I was just going to ask you, what do you think's happening with her in that sequence there?
I think that somehow Ryder is using her as a vessel. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how he would do that, and we haven't seen any indication that he even could do that. And she has the idol, and I just can't imagine that she's gonna turn without some other thing happening, unless the idol has that power to kind of take over whoever's near it or whoever's touching it or something. But it almost seemed like, well, I guess it didn't almost seem like this. I'm just guessing that somehow Ryder had something to do with it.
See, I thought it was more that, you know, as you say, there was the power was coming through the idol. There were people dying as Oliver was shooting them, and she was taking the idol further and further away from Ryder. So I felt like he was losing power. So, you know, the deaths of these people were coming through the idol, and since she was holding it, she was getting that power. But what we don't know about the idol is the idol a complete neutral party? And, you know, even though it uses the dark deaths to power an individual, does that mean that individual then is only evil? Or, like, you know, for example, if Oliver as a good hero now were to be holding the idol and get these deaths coming through, he would get power, but would it be a malevolent power or would it be a benign power? You know,
gotcha. I don't know. I like your reasoning there, with the deaths happening all around and she's holding the idol. That makes a lot of sense to me. I think you're probably right on that, but yeah, I don't know if it's, what kind of power that'll manifest, because we didn't see her really do anything.
Yeah.
So we don't know what that's going to, wait though. As I'm thinking through this, we need a solution to stop Dark, somebody that's really powerful now. And we're assuming Tyana is a light person, you know, a positive, a good guy.
Right.
You know, I mean, I haven't seen her do anything necessarily super heroic or anything like that, but you know, we're assuming she's on that side.
And she did shoot the soldiers, previously, you know, kind of in cold blood, I guess, but I mean, they were trying to escape.
That was
three or four episodes ago.
But what I'm getting at is maybe this is kind of foreshadowing to what, Oliver needs to do in order to stop Dark. Maybe he needs to channel some light energy through an idol like that. And they're kind of showing us through Tyana that it is possible to do that.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was going to be something more along the lines of Oliver repeated a line that Tyana had said the other week, which was, it takes a monster to kill a monster. Also kind of a reference to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because there was the Hive creature, and there was another creature called Lash, who's kind of a monster, and the two of them had to fight it out. But maybe Oliver, you know, Oliver had been like, I need to learn how to get my lightness to open up and everything like that. Maybe he needs to unleash his darkness, and battle with Dark for possession of the idol to take him down. And of course, if he does that, you know, it leads him down. It leads him back down the path that he's been working for 4 years to get away from. But he's talked, you know, this season about just how full of the dark he is. So I don't know. There's a complete possibility there.
I'm interested. You guys tell us what you think, because I would love to hear some theories. That's pretty great. They didn't give us much to go on. So, you know, what are we going to see from here on out? I'm sure they'll revisit that next week.
Right. And so we've got two more episodes left. And I just, you know, I really don't know how they're going to stop Dark. I mean, that, you know, what we just talked about is obviously a possibility, but, you know, Star City is relatively safe right now. We've got Thea trapped in the Ark. So they do need to rescue her and I guess kind of save all these other people. But, you know, I feel like they really need to deal with Dark, and then Ruve, once Dark's dealt with, I think Ruve will fall into place relatively quickly. We've got Quentin Lance supposedly just throwing his police career away in a moral high ground, but, you know, a poor choice for a way to keep your job, I guess. So
I don't know. I was intrigued by that. I didn't mind that.
I know it's the right thing to do, but it just seems like he's falling on his own sword here.
Maybe his explanation of it, it's pretty clear and, you know, very moral, I guess, depending on your point of view. And he gets to save face, you know, I mean, he gets to still continue to be the kind of person that we know he is. So
yeah.
I don't know. That was an interesting storyline. I didn't mind that one at all.
I'm kind of wondering how much he might continue to be on the show at that point then. Because if he's not a cop, like, what's the point of having this character around? So,
good point. Yeah, maybe he won't be.
Yeah. Hey, we got a little bit of feedback in the past week here. Let me read the first one. You can take the second one here. The Benjamin wrote to us via Twitter saying that the trope of the bad guy wanting to destroy the world to begin a new one is getting a bit old. He addressed this to our at Green Justice Pod as well as at Agents Podcast again because we're seeing the same style.
It's happening on both
on both shows. Yeah,
yeah.
But he says he follows it up with another one. Seriously, you should play a game and think of all the movies where it's used. Even the new X-Men is going there. I'm assuming he's talking about X-Men Apocalypse. So, yeah, it is. It's you know, it's everything. There's no new idea under the sun, right? I mean, you pick up any comic series, and usually, you know, they're trying to retell tales in a new and fresh way. But there's really only so many tales you can tell. You've got good guys defeating bad guys, or good guys becoming bad guys, or redemption tropes, and you know, it's a lot of repetitive stuff out there in the genre, in the science fiction fantasy superhero genre. So it's just the idea is to, you know, make interesting characters and have them do interesting things and revisit ground that may not have been covered in the most recent, you know, episode of your favorite TV show or movie. So
the stakes have to be high. And, you know, when you've had some pretty high stakes, but you've done that a couple times, like say in the, you know, the first, the destruction of part of a city, then the destruction of the city, you got to kind of keep raising the stakes. Well, I don't think you have to do that, but I think that's a general feeling that you need to keep raising the stakes in a ongoing story like that. I think you can still have really good stories and the stakes don't have to be huge. They can just be different. But
right. They just don't want to feel like they're kind of doing the same thing, but just turning it, you know, turning left 90 degrees and doing another similar thing. So, So what was this other email we got?
Well, we got an interesting email right after the show came out last week from DRB571.
Derbfrisler1.
I don't know. Anyway, but either way, I'd love to hear it. Let me give you their opinion here. It says, I'm surprised to hear your show talking about a great dissatisfaction with season 4. I think it's the best one yet. It's a far sight better than the grimdark teen soap opera melodrama of season 1. It's finally becoming a true comic book show. We have a villain with magic powers, and that's just fine with me. I love that Oliver leads a team of other heroes rather than working alone. It's far more interesting than a single guy brooding alone. And I love Felicity and like her relationship with Oliver. My only complaint is killing off Black Canary. When combined with crippling Felicity, it's all very women in refrigerators. Creepy metaphor, but
you're speaking of tropes.
Yeah. great opinion. I have to say, I don't entirely disagree with you. And I think I've said, you and I have had discussions on our differences of satisfaction with certain parts of the season of the show. And I think one of the things I said, which is maybe some of the point of this message, is that you got to try different things from year to year. And it sometimes successful, sometimes people don't think it is. And you appeal to different groups of people too when you have these things. So perfectly valid opinions. I think this is not my favorite season, as it sounds like maybe it is with a Durab. But I'm not minding it too much. There's been parts that I wasn't too keen on though.
Let me here's my take on this, and this is kind of what I thought about when I got this email, because while DRB571 is surprised to hear us saying that we're dissatisfied with season 4, I was actually surprised to find out how much they enjoyed it. But I think that's great. As we've said before, everybody likes something different, and there's no problem. If this is your favorite season, don't let anybody else convince you that this is garbage.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and it's not. And you get this a lot online. People who are dissatisfied or who don't like something feel the need to spew that around a lot. And I use the term spew on purpose. It just because it's It's like a fire hose that just gets turned on, which is what we try to do disgusting. Here. I feel we're a little more surgical in our discussions about this, you know, in our dissatisfaction, because we can say that we like certain things and we didn't like other things. I agree. I like having magic powers on the show. I like having a team approach. A team approach is always more interesting than just having kind of a solo hero. But what it comes down to is the level of writing and the kind of the effort that they put in to come up with creative ways to tell what could, as we've talked about just a second ago, repetitive stories versus coming up with ideas that they really don't know how to get themselves out of, and they take Deus Ex Machina sort of story ideas where, you know, things just happen to work out for the team so that they can accomplish what they need to accomplish in the 45 minutes of the show that they need to, versus, you know, just doing smart writing. If you're going to write a character into a situation, don't just have another character show up and have the answer. I mean, you need to be able to have the time to work stuff out. And that's where I feel the third and the fourth season to a degree have fallen. The level of good writing, which is where all the shows start. You can have an amazing director, but if it's not on the page, it's not on the stage, as they say. So,
I also think, because another reason that you and I have talked about this especially, but other people online are a little disappointed, is because we know they're capable of that good writing because we've seen it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it just gets a little disappointing when something isn't of that high quality when we're used to it on a show that we're really enjoying.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let me hit up a couple references here. Obviously, a lot of cities were mentioned on this particular episode. Monument Point, Haven Rock, Markovia, Corto Maltese, which have been, you know, mentioned before on the show. Somebody, I can't remember who this was now, somebody mentioned last year's greatest hits.
That was Felicity.
Felicity, okay. Yeah. In referring to Brick and Murmur, which is pretty funny because, of course, they were villains from season 3. And then I kind of talked a little bit earlier about Monument Point and its relationship to Star City, so I think we've got that. But I'm interested to see where the last two episodes go. As you mentioned before, this was a very unexpected ending to this particular episode, which I'm glad they did it now to give them two episodes to kind of deal with the fallout of the incident.
Yeah.
And have to deal with, you know, whatever they're going to deal with. Again, I'm not sure where they're going. I've seen some stuff in the previews that gives me a little bit of an idea. I don't know if I'm sold on it, but, you know, a preview is a preview. Let's see how it actually works in the show. So,
yeah. Yeah. This episode reminded me a little bit about like Superman number 80, a comic book back when they destroyed Coast City back after Superman had died.
Oh, yeah. Green Lantern 80 or Superman 80?
I think it was Superman 80 when they destroyed Coast City. I mean, okay. that's Green Lantern City, but I think it was Superman, the Superman comic book that it happened, if
true.
I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
but,
yeah. Yeah, it was part of the death of Superman, Reign of Superman storyline, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So it reminded me of that. So we'll kind of see where that fallout goes and how it affects Felicity, because she seems to be hit hardest. So
okay,
but I had a good time talking.
Yeah, I did too. I always enjoy talking to you about this, Josh. So thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Green Justice.
And if you guys enjoyed hearing us talk about it, we'd love to have some feedback for you. So hop over there on iTunes and leave us some feedback. We really want to hear some of your comments. But also, we would like you to contact us, just like we did from our friend DRB571, let us know what you think. If you agree with us on season 4, or if you think Tiana is going bad, or if she just needs some contact solution, something like that, send us an email, greenjustice@randomchatter.com. You can go also to Twitter, find us at greenjusticepod, or our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And if you're interested in comic book shows, you can check out the other shows we host, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity of Flash podcast, all available on randomchatter.com. All shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed the city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.